Blog Talk Radio.
The Haunting.
My eyes beheld an eerie sight, for my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
He did the monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east, to the master bedroom where the vampires feast. The ghouls all came from their humble abode to get a jolt from my electrode.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash. The zombies were having fun. The party had just begun. The guests included Wolfman, Dracula, and his son. The scene was rocking, all were digging the sounds. Igor on chains, backed by his baying hounds. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They played the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash. Out from his coffin, Rack's voice did ring. Seemed he was troubled by just one thing. Opened the lid and shook his fist and said, "Whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?"
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash.
The monster mash.
And it's a graveyard smash.
It's now the mash.
It's caught on in a flash.
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash. Now everything's cool, Drac's a part of the band, and my monster mash is the hit of the land. For you the living, this mash was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them Boris sent you.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
The monster mash.
And you my graveyard smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
Mash. Ooh.
Easy, Igor, you impetuous young boy.
Mash. Ooh.
Monster mash.
Gosh.
Hello world, and welcome to the Garden of Enlightenment. Do You Wild Dove is off tonight, so it will be myself, Grey Eye Smith, and Weaver of Dreams, a.k.a. Katie. And so that's the gist of tonight's show. Tonight's show is based on a contest that I ran called Haunted Houses. And so that's that for that. And thanks for calling in to listen. All right, I'm going to go to the board here and see if we have any callers. And we do. Hello, Weaver of Dreams.
Hello, Gray. Great to be here.
Thank you. Happy to have you. And how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing wonderfully, thank you. I'm awake and I'm very happy. I don't know why I'm happy, but I am. That's cool.
And hello, Miriam, in the group. We hope to hear from you soon. Hopefully that number I sent will work for you. All right, Katie, what do we have?
We have Thick Walls of Relationship Dejection by Jenny Deep. And I will read that. You have to excuse me, I'm having a bit of a problem with my voice tonight, too. I won't be shouting. I'll be nice and quiet, which will be a relief for everybody. Okay, here we go. Toxic Walls of Relationship Dejection. Within these walls, monstrous screams echo. Toxicity builds like intense heat waves, while lightning strikes our hearts. Love seeps 6 feet under as sorrow takes over. Records spinning on turntables in my head, playing tit for tats on repeat, dusk until dawn. Grudges transpire, stirring up resentment. It may be all said and done to you, but not for me. Oh, how I wish upon the brightest star tonight that tomorrow we can rebuild all walls and reconnect before the monster escapes, causing cataclysmic calamity and internal dejection. Maybe I can laugh and smile with you again, so when the thunder hits your tongue, the piercing sound leaving your mouth stings my ears and leaves me rattled. End poem.
Wow. Beautiful read, and such a hard-hitting poem. When relationships go sideways, it really is a tragedy that you can feel in her words, in her write. I thought it was a fabulous pen, and you did a wonderful read of it. And what did you think, Weaver?
I agree with you, yes. Very hard-hitting, very, very deep. Jenny usually says that what she writes about is mostly to do with her own life and her past and things that have happened. So let's hope that nothing was too horrible. You can rebuild the walls and reconnect. I would like to know who the monster is that's going to escape, but you'll probably let us know about that. So yes, I thought it was very well written, very neat, and yeah, I enjoyed it. Thank you, Jenny.
Excellent comment, Weaver. Thank you so much. All right. Well, I don't see Miriam on the board quite yet, so we'll carry on.
We certainly will. Okay. Next up is Lurking in Lurid Lullabies by Poetic Debris. Oh, fabulous name. Would you care to give this one a read, please, Gray?
Sure. Lurking in Lurid Lullabies by Poetic Debris. Eerie tales aren't mine to tell. Still, I give it a try. Spinning some words to dispel that little girl's outcry. For she has hissed countless times that she only wants me to weave her some ragged rhymes metered with misery. So I engraved a few lines down her buckles, cracked bones, as the threads basting her frown, fretted, echoing sharp groans. Berserkly, she squirmed around as I hummed a shrill beat, praying for her to sleep sound on her bloodied bedsheet. And just when her screams died out and her eyes shut anew, spooked, my mom began to shout, "Who are you talking to?" End poem. Yeah. What are your thoughts, Weaver?
Yes, I thought this was short but sweet, I think we should say, shouldn't we? You just wanted a bit more. I did anyway, but I thought this was brilliant. Lurking in Lurid Lullabies. I like the fact that there's a little girl and she wants her to tell her stories and do whatever. Then it transpires that there's nobody there. That's so cool. I like a little twist like that at the end. So, yes, beautifully done, very well written. Thank you for sharing that with us, Poetic Debris.
Absolutely. It was a wonderful write. Very intriguing, and pulls you right into the scene of this little girl talking to herself. But she's not, you know, she sees something there that is needing a story, and she relates it, and then her mom says, "Who are you talking to?" Which is spooky as hell. So, yeah, great job, Poetic Debris, and fabulous write. And what do we have next?
Okay, next we have Terminal Treats by Blues Man. Ah, you see, I should have read that last one, and you should have read this one. But I'll read it anyway, because I don't care. My voice is deep enough tonight to be considered manly. Okay. Terminal Treats by Blues Man. Oh, is the ring at the door. You want to get Lemon.
Sure. Okay. Hello, area code 703. Who's calling, please?
This is Miriam.
Hi, Miriam.
Hi.
Thank you for calling in.
It only took me 4 tries, but here I am.
Well done. Right. Great to have you with us. I'm sorry.
Thanks. It's good to hear your voice.
Ah, thank you so much. Good to have you. I was just saying I'm having a lot of trouble with my throat, my voice at the moment. I'm sounding like a little old man who smokes 60 a day. But so I will be trying to speak a bit quieter than I normally do and not shriek. Okay, you're just in time to hear by Blues Man. Just past the village boneyard sits a haunted mansion on the hill, where dwells the ghost of a bard with a banshee screaming shrill. Through the rusted wrought iron gate, a blanket of low-lying foggy mist, where fell creatures hope to sate the mortal fear you cannot resist. Up steps the front door with your bag of candy in tow. Ringing the bell opens trap door and you fall deep down below. Hovering above your torn, broken body, death chills run up your spiritual spine. Ghost of the bard brings a hot toddy. Now your soul in ownership is mine. End poem.
Wow, beautiful read. And what a haunting poem. You know, trick or treat. Guess what? You're the treat. yeah, I liked it. The ghost of the bard brings hot toddy. Now your soul in ownership is mine. Well, haunting, right, for sure. It really is, you know, bone chilling, for sure. You did a great read of it, Weaver. What are your thoughts, Miriam?
Well, I'm very glad that in all my trick-or-treating work years, I never ended up at this door.
Yeah. No kidding.
Ghost of
thank
the
you,
Weaver.
I mean, thank you.
Body. Oh, wow. I had no idea Shakespeare was like that.
In modern days, he probably is.
Yeah.
I was just talking about him today, actually. Sorry again, Grace. Sorry. Carry on.
Quoting him. No, that's what I'm done for now. I'm still a little bit twirling around in memory of the phone fiasco. But here I am. Somebody else comment more intelligently, please, on terminal treats.
Well, that won't be me then. Over to you, Gray. Take it away.
What are your thoughts, Weaver?
I thought it was brilliant. I do love it. I do love anything like this. It just really amuses me. As you say, you wouldn't expect a handful of candy and then that's you down below in a bunker or somewhere. I wonder where he was. But, oh, yeah, I loved it. Actually, that last stanza was rather prettily done, I thought. Hovering above your tone-broken body, death chills, runs up your spiritual spine. Ghost of the bard brings a hot toddy. Now your soul in ownership is mine. That was rather well put, I thought. Very, very succinct. And gave a beautiful end to the story. So thank you, Blues Man, for sharing with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Just past the village boneyard sits a haunted mansion on the hill, where dwells the ghost of a bard with a banshee screaming shrill. You know, right there it pulls you into the right and sets the tone for the mood, you know, very haunting and scary. And you did a beautiful job of that. So thank you so much for sharing, Blues Man. All right, Weaver, where are we to next?
Where are we to next? I love that. Okay, next we have, if it decides to move, The Magicians, The Haunting of the Necromancer by the poet. And there's a SoundCloud for this, I think.
Okay. And we'll play that. Here we go.
The Haunting of the Necromancer.
The necromancer knocked on the door of the office of his father, the king of the Grim Reapers, nervously. "Come in," he heard his father shout back. He walked in the paperwork filled office to see his dad signing and reading papers. "With quill and ink. Glad to see you. Give me the excuse to put the pen down. I hate this pen," the Grand Reaper said. He looked like a man at that time. "As we must use a quill and ink to keep up the Gothic look of the place," said the Grand Reaper. "He likes to have his way, you know." "Yes," said the Necromancer. "I'll bring you to my dingy little office," said the Grand Reaper. "I wanted to tell you something you should know about," said the Necromancer. "An illegal haunting." "I will deal with it," said the Grand Reaper. "Tell me about it." "Well, it's in my home," said the Necromancer. "Your home? How? Why?" asked his father. "One of fate's chosen to die," the Necromancer said, only to be interrupted by his father. "The ghost of one of your victims followed you home, did they?" the Grand Reaper. "Yes, and is not moving on. He's terrorizing my family," said the Necromancer. "And your children have no powers," said the Grand Reaper. "So it bothers them most." "Yes, they see their dad as a dork talking about magic and ghosts being sent to the other side," said the Necromancer. "Then Grandad will visit and we can get the ghost," said the Grand Reaper. Later, there was a knock on the door of the home of the Necromancer. "Who is it?" asked Mance Alexander. "Avon calling," a voice returned. "Dad?" asked Lance. "Of course," grumbled Blake Alexander. "Let me in, boy." Lance let him in. "You ready?" asked Lance. "I'm always ready." "Your granddad to your children?" called Lance's wife. Outran Lance's two teenage children. "Look, it's Dork and Super Dork," said Lance Jr., seeing his dad and granddad. "I am not Super Dork. They call me Blue Midnight," said Blake, offended. "And he's the Enchanter. We're sorcerers." "Whatever," Junior replied. "You're the biggest fakers. Magic is not real, it's just a trick," Christine, Lance's daughter, said. "We are not fake anythings," said Lance. "I could debate that with you," said Blake. "Don't go there in front of my children, Dad," said Lance. "Where's the ghost?" Blake said, changing the subject. "Him. He's watching the TV," said Junior. "Watching TV?" Blake said skeptically. "Yeah," said Christine. "What's on? Is it the monsters?" asked Blake. "No, not now. That's over. He's watching Neighbours," said Junior. "You sure it isn't the monsters?" asked Blake. "No, come with me," Lance said coldly to his dad. They wandered into the living room. The ghost was sitting in Lance's favourite chair, watching Neighbours in an eerie scene. Blake huffed. "This is the stupidest haunting I have ever seen. You're only wanting gone to get your seat back." The ghost looked at them. "Necromancer, who's your friend?" asked the ghost. "He's your worst nightmare," said Lance darkly. Blake ran into the room and sat on the couch, eagerly watching the TV. "Now I have a ghost and a Grim Reaper in my land room," said Lance, infuriated. "A Grim Reaper? Where?" asked the ghost in horror. "Me, the Grand Reaper," said Blake, more engrossed in the television than the ghost, who he saw as no problem. "Grand Reaper? What's that?" asked the ghost. "Another name for a couch potato," hissed Lance. "King of the Grim Reapers. He's meant to get rid of you." "Oh, he's no bother. He has good taste. Anyone who likes Neighbours is all right with me," said Blake. you watch that tripe? Said Lance. Blake winked. See what I mean? Blake said. Then Blake and the ghost laughed. Lance looked piqued. If you won't help, I'll get rid of him myself, shouted Lance, his features growing darker. Dog, why are you shouting? Said Junior, walking in the room. Junior, get out of here. Daddy's taking the ghost to the other side, said Lance. Yeah, right, Dork, said Junior. We sat on the couch next to the Reaper and watched the show. He's in this episode, is he? Said Junior, excitedly seeing an actor in the show. Yes, yes. This is what I need, said Lance sarcastically. Lance walked up to the ghost. Get out of the way, I can't see the TV. The ghost complained. Get out of his way, boy, hissed Blake. Lance rolled his eyes. You are dead, come with me, said Lance in a voice so funny it made Junior laugh. Who wants to watch this? Said the ghost standing up. Quit it, stop using the voice. Let him watch this, said Blake. He's a ghost, he shouldn't be watching soapies, said Lance. Dork, snapped Junior in protest. After the show finished, Lance talked his dad into letting him take the ghost to the other side. Lance's children after that called Lance the Mega Dork.
I liked it. Beautiful read and a wonderful storyline. You know, there's the necromancer gets haunted by a ghost and he seeks his help from his dad, the Grim Reaper, Grand Reaper. And then the ghost, you know, is watching TV and, you know, he's nothing but a pain. And after the show finished, Lance talked his dad into letting him take the ghost to the other side. Lance's children after that called Lance the Mega Dork. Humorous, right? Well, well written and a great read as well. And what are your thoughts, Weaver?
Oh, yes, I really enjoyed this. As you say, it was so well written, but it also had humor in it, which I really appreciate. I thought it was very, very well written. Excuse me. And I love the conversations between everybody. I do like that. It read as a story, which, you know, is great. And all the different references to TV and then the rubbish that can be on it sometimes. What's it? Is it the monsters? Yeah, so clever. Very clever. Very well written. And I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for sharing.
Absolutely. Beautiful comment, Weaver. And Miriam, what are your thoughts?
I'm trying to find my favorite line here. Oh, I'm almost there. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm having trouble finding it. The one where I think it's the Grand Reaper's scolding his son, and he says, you only want the ghost gone so you can have his seat.
Yeah, I'm on that line right now.
Oh, read it right then, please.
It said, Blake huffed, this is the stupidest haunting I have ever seen. You only want him gone to get your seat back. That's
right. Well, it's a very funny story. I had a lot of fun with it. A very
Thanks
different
for
take on how
oh,
very different take on how magicians behave and how their children and grandchildren view them. And then there's this real ghost in the house. It's just hysterical. Okay, I'm done.
Thank you, my dear.
Thank you, Miriam. All right, you're where we do next.
And next we have From the Depths by E.G. Cool. And Gray, could you read this, please?
Sure. From the Depths by E.J. Cool. Emaciated remains lay cloistered in demonic breath, as fire dies down in a stone-arched pit. Crackling indifference somehow keeps the dungeon lit. I awake to elongated claw, raking through my hair, scraping against my scalp with needle, nail. Screaming osmosis squelches an atrocity before me. My dearest friend, inchoate, with no skin, a floating spine and ribs, housing, working lungs, all dripping puce, malleable bone, piled by wet tendon, striated brain, oscillating under mucus gloss. Two bulbous red eyes converge into one, a disgusting pus orb molesting me with its desolate gaze. What are you? I query, not with my mouth. What has become of you, my friend? I inquire once more, my voice small. This time, my parasitic lips engage. Three fingers, twisted and contorted, drift to meet my face, where those chapped flesh strips, last discombobulated syllables. I am your friend, says a monstrosity. Beaded ferment snakes through, row upon row of serrated teeth, tentacled mandibular symphysis. All I can do is wail into the void while a knurled deformity cradles my cavernous torso, paralyzed by fear, helpless to escape, despite the wretched abominations of fet-meshed weakness. I am weaker still, trapped in perversion, counting beats of a banshee heart, praying my captor grows bored. Upon completing the trituration of my pellicle, it finally does, and I worm into the stairwell in the near pitch black, with only the knowledge that I must crawl from the depths. Pandemonium swallows me whole, pepsia. I am regurgitated with sulfur. Confidence bleeds away, cause of crows, echo, discordant taunts. My cancer blotted perception dares rise. Quavering hands, empty, turned, variegated, imbued palms up. In an instant, a bright light switches on. Poured from above, and from each ornate step riser, three more lights, all pristine ivory, all but blinding me, scalding the ambarious sin from my unveiled muscle tissue. My nerves steer and hiss with bubbling sizzle, heard and felt through every shuddering press, every shambling pull. Tepid fluids leave fuming trails behind. My shrinking form becomes more anemic the further I climb. Pinching the gap, I almost touch the top, but my feeble body stalls, and I can move the mass no more. Woe floods from my eyes in silent sorrow. Paramecium pools grow around me, wherefrom saplings sprout. A diaphanous limb reaches out and takes me by the wrist. I am lifted whole, as though a feather floating on the wind, placed delicately in a bath of warm wisteria milk to be graced by the sight of joyous Newman crooning over me. Cherished in arms, countless cordial, empowering impressment. Sun halos radiate from physiognomies, most serene, transformed in gentle flashes, as if puddles of fresh rainfall. I am awed, a newborn child held by God, and oh, how I weep, feel, and know true love at long last. End poem. Wow. That was pretty epic. What are your thoughts, Weaver?
Yes, as you say, definitely epic. Wow. I mean, there are so many good lines in here. Oh, I like, well, not like exactly, but I react to two bulbous red eyes converge into one, a disgusting pus orb molesting me with its desolate gaze. That's creepy. I love the word osmosis, by the way. That's an amazing word. I've not heard screaming osmosis, but I do like it. Very well done, well written, great storylines. And as I say, very interesting as well. Creepy and sad and a little bit of everything, I think. So thank you so much, EJ, for sharing that with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Beautiful comment, Weaver. Thank you. And Miriam, what are your thoughts?
Osmosis is a great word, but I like discombobulated even better. It's one of my favorites.
Yep.
I don't know this poet, so I don't know if she ordinarily writes this way, but it just seems like she had so much fun with the language. And I'm going to have to go back and read this poem with another tab open with my favorite thesaurus or dictionary. There's so many words in here that either I don't know them or I'm not absolutely sure how they're being used here. And great job of reading. I mean, if you did that with no practice at all, that's phenomenal. And other thing I have to say about the poem is that I was really surprised by the last verse. I was never expecting that. And then we have some hint of what's coming in the verse before that. But it's just so beautiful. And I am awed, a newborn child held by God, is so different from the creepiness and gore of the rest of the poem. It does say from the depths. So maybe that's what she was getting at in the title, is after this all this horrible stuff, she comes out of the depths.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I agree wholeheartedly. And, you know, I like it. It's dark, but it's beautiful at the same time. It ends quite beautifully with the birth of a child. And I'm awed, a newborn child held by God. And oh, how I weep, feel, and know true love at long last. Yeah, it was an epic, right? You know, filled with an excellent vocabulary and definitely need a thesaurus to accompany you on the read. I agree wholeheartedly, Miriam. So thank you for sharing, EJ Cool. And yeah, it was a pleasure to read it. An awesome possum. All right, what do we have next, Weaver?
And next we have Deserted Dwelling by Random Scribbler. Now, can anybody tell me if Random Scribbler is a man or a woman? I'd like to get us back on a sort of a, you know, proper reading agenda. So, can anybody tell me?
No, Random. I'm trying to say.
What?
Okay.
I missed it.
Is it? Did you say miss?
I said I missed.
Oh.
I missed what Reyes just said.
Oh, dear. Okay. I'm trying to figure out whether this is a man or a woman, to allocate it to either, you know, you, me, or Gray. But anyway, and never mind. What we'll do now is I will read this one and then we'll carry on from there. Deserted Dwelling. A house abandoned, solitary one, said to be haunted, but people had seen ghosts none. Freezing and frigid evening, all misty it was when this came to pass. Chilled to the bones, looking for shelter, a traveller walked by. Perceiving it, thought to give it a try. He knocked on door, then opened in front of him. As he entered, it closed behind him. Cared he did not, comfort for long he had not. He found himself in an empty hall, windowless, with the fireplace nevertheless. matchbox over the mantelpiece that he took to strike a matchstick. Lamps were flickering and the matches were not working. One by one, he exhausted nearly all of them. The lights also got extinguished there and then. The last matchstick lit up and there was brief illumination. Momentary relief turned into horror when he discerned a creepy presence, giving him spine-chilling, eerie sensation. Came a puff of wind, and it became pitch dark again. Terrified, letting out a blood-curdling scream, he ran toward the door, but he couldn't find it anymore. He kept running and running and running in circles, but did not find the door. He never did find the door. End poem.
Wow, beautiful read. And that was a great poem as well. I mean, you know, here's somebody who's looking for shelter, and the shelter he finds ends up being his personal hell, which is haunting and epic. So, yeah, great, right, random scribbler, and thank you for sharing. Miriam, what are your thoughts?
Here we have a true ghost story. It's one that would be really good for someone to read around a fireplace or a campfire. You know, it's just the right length for that kind of storytelling, and it ends in horror, which a true ghost story ought to. So it has a ghost or something like a ghost in it, and I think even more than looking for the door or not being able to find it, I am horrified by the idea of trying to light a match so you can see what's going on around you, and, you know, having that hope. And finally, there's some light, and what you see is a creepy presence. Ah! That's awful.
Yeah, I agree. Thanks so much, Miriam. And Weaver, what are your thoughts?
Oh, yes, definitely. A good storyline. I have got this horror of looking behind me and seeing somebody there. I've always had that feeling that there was, you know, there is someone behind me. I'll have to turn around quickly. I'll catch them. But I never do. So I can understand this entirely. And as you said, Miriam, there is nothing worse than trying, being in the dark and trying to find a way to give you light and the matches don't work. Oh, my goodness me. That would be so scary. Yeah, I think it was beautifully done. I really enjoyed it. Just a perfect thing for this time of the year. So very well done, Random Scribbler, and thank you for sharing that with us.
Absolutely. Beautiful comment, Lisa.
Do you want me to go on to the next one, or...? Oh, my goodness.
Yes, please.
We have a ghost with us.
Oh, my goodness me. That was so cool. That's so creepy. That's so cool. I don't usually even bother about things like that, but that is so good. It gave me chills.
Yeah.
Did you get chills, Miriam? Did you go,
Sure did.
So well done.
Ghost over the phone.
Okay.
Sorry, what do we have next?
I will.
Here we go.
Yeah, we've got it. This is Footsteps in the Dark by Dindley. Miriam, would you like to read this for us, please?
Sure. Footsteps in the Dark by Dindley. Something or someone broke my sleep. I woke up. It was dark in there. I lay quite still, just listening, and heard a footstep on the stair. Then came another and a third. They stopped outside my bedroom door. It opened, creaking, just a crack. I heard a shuffling on the floor. Something or someone crossed the room went over to the old oak chest, lifted the lid, rummaged inside. I heard the uninvited guest mutter something, heave a sigh, then move back to the bedroom door. The steps retreated down the stairs. I listened, but I heard no more. I switched the bedside light on then and saw the open bedroom door, and as I looked around the room, saw small wet footprints on the floor. I followed them all down the stairs. They led me to the fireplace, and there they stopped against the brick, nowhere to go and not a trace. I didn't hear those steps again. Maybe I slept through, I don't know. I asked around and heard a tale that happened here long, long ago. A child went looking for her doll. She scoured the house and then the grounds. While searching in the fading light, she fell into the lake and drowned. It said that on a moonlit night, she walks, still looking for her doll, a little girl in white nightgown, just searching with no hope at all. She's buried in the churchyard here. I laid some flowers, said a prayer. Someone had left an old rag doll. I hope she knows somebody cares.
Wow.
Well done.
Thanks.
Great read. What a haunting tale. You know, you're woken up by hearing sounds on the stairs and then the creak of your door and then somebody rummaging through your clothing chest and and then they're walking away and then you turn on the light and you see wet footsteps. Ooh, spooky. And then you find out that you know, there was a little girl who drowned a long time ago, and she drowned fell into the lake and drowned. It is said that on a moonlit night, she walks, still looking for her doll, a little girl in a white nightgown, just searching with no hope at all. She's buried in the churchyard here. I laid some flowers, said a prayer. Someone had left an old rag doll. I hope she knows somebody cares. Yeah, that was haunting for sure. Great writing and play and excellent read, Miriam. What are your thoughts, Weaver?
Yes, very cohesive and very well written. I like the fact that we were told about the small wet footprints, and then only later do we find out that the reason they're wet is because she's a ghost and she'd fallen in the lake. I thought that was wonderful. That last sauce, how sad is that last stanza? Oh, but again, wonderfully done. Beautiful storyline. Beautifully done. So, thank you very much for sharing that with us. It was
absolutely great comment. Thank you, Weaver. And Miriam, what are your thoughts?
I was really, really engrossed by the story overall. I did notice the cadence in the poem. It really, really beautiful form. And then I went back after I read it and looked at the rhyming and the meter, and it's just so beautifully done. So we have a combination here, a beautiful rhyme and meter poetry with truly engaging story, and this week, because it's a ghost story. It's wonderful, and it's touching too, so it's got everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much, Miriam. All right, Weaver, where would you next?
Next we have, In a Horribly and Horror-Filled Haunted House by Orange Sage, and I will attempt to read this one. Bear with me, Orange Sage, I'll do my best. Right. In a horribly and horror-filled haunted house, there roams a horribly uglified ghost with the look of beauty once. Upstairs, along passageways, she floats in the large and horribly haunted house, flitting and whispering through lonely rooms. At the nursery door, stops, hands to her heart, beatless chest, with a cry so horribly inhuman. And in the ballroom she dances in her horribly ugly, tattered and bloodied pale sink dress. Beautiful once, dances to some sadly silent tune, sings, her face contorted to a rage of conflicted emotions. On a strip of silk dress, hangs herself by the chandeliers. Each night, again, again, for over 150 years, is there no end? End poem.
Beautiful read, Weaver. And that's a haunting for sure. You know, I don't know what drove this woman to her insanity that caused her to kill herself, but it's a wonderfully written tale. It has an excellent flow to it. In the nursery door, stops, hands to her heart, breathless, chest with a cry so horribly humane. So yeah, I guess it was a loss of a child that caused her to lose her mind and go insane. Hanging herself every day for each night again and again for over 150 years. Now that's haunted for sure. Excellent, right, Lauren Sage, and thank you for reading, Weaver. What are your thoughts, Miriam?
Well, we've got a horror story again, but it's right in the middle is this awful tragedy, which you pointed out to me. I had to go back and read that again. It does say, at the nursery store, at the nursery door, stops, hand to her heartbeatless chest. And, you know, I can understand grief being so overwhelming that you would want to make an end to it all. And just thinking, life will never get better. And just the longing and loss that's involved. And how important it is to have somebody there to support you through that. And apparently she didn't have that. And she has to go through it every over 150 years. Oh, no.
Yeah. Great comment, Miriam. Thank you so much. And Weaver, what are your thoughts?
I agree with Miriam. It must have been so horrible. And of course, in the moment, she realizes what's going to happen. And she obviously knows it's happened again and again. So that must be terrible. Completely unable to change that record, as it were. She's going to keep going on and on, crying and looking and finding and, oh, yes, very heartfelt, very spooky and sad and well done. Those first couple of lines as well, they're so good. Their rooms are horribly, I mean, I couldn't even say it. Their rooms are horribly uglified ghost with the look of beauty once. Very sad. Yeah, beautifully done, Orange Sage. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment. Thank you, Weaver. All right, where are we to next, Weaver?
Next we have Halloween Dare by Stan Holliday. And would you read this for us, please, Gray?
Sure. Halloween Dare by Stan Holliday. In the near silence of this night, as witching hour soon approaches, I try to overcome my fright. Despite my best, it still encroaches. I'm in this house based on a dare, made in the cheerful light of day, but now I feel dark spirits there, urging me to run away. Flee this small deserted house. Flee right now while you still can. Flee, my mood and mind espouse. But fleeing isn't in the plan. Outside, a zephyr shakes dead leaves, which rattle just like loose dry bones. Then a stronger passing breeze whispers in the eaves with low, dull moans. Then all turns still unnaturally. Watch dial declares, midnight is here. Kidneys clench, I need to pee. Alone was not, but night and fear. They say he murdered his young wife as she slept in this bedroom, head nearly severed with a knife, and thus earned his endless doom. He thought his bride had been untrue, and he never found that he was wrong. But by the time his tale was through, he'd hung himself from a beam, strong. Now in the silence, floorboards creak in the corner, a strange mist appears. I stand to get a better peek, trying my best to face my fears. Mist takes the form of a low bed, which holds a lovely staring girl. Her stare is dead, sheets stained blood red, across pale throat, red blood streaks curl. I stand now transfixed with fear, eyes bulging, my jaw hangs, slack. I feel a presence drawing near, then a cold breath upon my back. I slowly turn as the rope drops and see mad eyes in spectral face. As rope tightens, my breathing stops. My eyes glaze now, in now, slack pace. Each year, October 31st, the husband slaves his wife again, trying to seek his blood thirst, lust thirst. He endlessly repeats his sin. And seeing me at last, he thought he'd found the lover of his wife, the one who for so long he'd sought. For his mistake, I paid my life. So pass this derelict farmhouse, heed my whisper in your ear, heed that dread which you cannot douse. On Hallows Eve, don't come in here. End poem. And what are your thoughts, Miriam?
Well, I plan to take Stan's advice. I'm not going to go in there. A very sad story, and this is basically a story that I have heard so often about somebody assuming that their partner has betrayed them and acting on that assumption instead of waiting to find out. If only they would wait to find out, they wouldn't murder anybody. You know? Never found that he was wrong. Then he hangs himself, and then I guess this other third party in the story gets blamed for the whole thing and gets hung. So this is all in all an anti-death penalty poem, and I approve of that sentiment. Very, very well done. The form of the poem is done very well, too. I'm sorry about all this coughing. Can't help it.
That's okay. I was sneezing during my read, so. And Weaver, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, don't worry about the coughing at all, Miriam. My voice is going dreadfully as well, so we've got that. We've got that good voices for this particular evening. We can be spooky. Right.
All
did you want to say something?
Yeah, what did you think of the poem, Weaver?
Okay. Okay, yes. Another beautifully written one. I think it's the ideas come to people and they run with it. I think it's so good. I mean, this was just, it's your typical, distrusted his wife, who was probably a lot younger, and then decided to himself without any proof that she was cheating, and then does the horrible thing, is full of remorse, and hangs himself. What a stupid person. Honestly, he didn't deserve his lovely bride. Definitely not. Yeah, well written. I love it. It was cohesive. I like that word as well, by the way. I've used that twice now. And he did the wrong thing and had to pay for it. So is life. It's just what it's like. Don't go murdering people because you will regret it. I hope everybody listens to that. Don't kill anybody. Mind you. Anyway, stop this woman. Be sensible. Okay, lovely. Very well done, Stan, and thank you for sharing.
Nope, Miriam's phone died.
Oh, no. She might come back. Miriam, come back. Okay. Right, I put the next one up. We've got Hannah of Green Bungalow, 99. Oh, no. That's 99 words, sorry. Hannah of Green Bungalow. And I will read this one. Oh, dear. Hannah, here we are, Hannah of Green Bungalow. As she stepped in the hot bathtub, young Hannah slipped. She broke her ribs. Didn't survive. Yes, she died. So very long ago, in the Green Bungalow, off the cobbled streets in Darjeeling. The cottage, now a wrecked ruin, has seen 100 winters, rain and springs, tattered worn, sad forlorn, no singing birds, deathly hush prevails in the Green Bungalow of Darjeeling. Oft in cold and wintry nights, when mist is heavy, thick, foggy, white, the locals swear they clearly hear young Hannah sing sad, sorrowful songs as she bathes in hot bathtub in the Green Bungalow of Darjeeling. End poem.
Woo-hoo. Mm. That was a haunting tale, too. Here's poor Hannah just having a bath, falls, breaks her ribs, and dies. How haunting is that? That's very tragic. And then the cottage, now a wrecked ruin, has seen 100 winters, rains and springs, tattered, worn, and forlorn, no singing birds, deathly hush prevails in the Green Bungalow of Darjeeling. Wow. Haunted place. What did you think, Weaver? Hello, Weaver?
Sorry. I didn't think I was going to do that. Oh, no. Oh, I didn't. I've unmuted myself, by the way. I was saying, yes, very well written. Again, you know, you've got this repetition on the last two lines. I think in every stanza, and I like repetition. I think I don't know why I like it. I just do. I think it just holds a poem together, gives it that sort of clear definition, and it's very well done. So, yeah, you're right. Poor girl. I mean, you wouldn't expect that to happen, would you? What a shame. So, yes, I thought it was great. Thank you so much for sharing.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment, Weaver. And so what do we have next?
Well, we have one more of this, and then we're going on to, I think we've got open poetry, haven't we? Yes. So we'll have this next one. Is Vampire Vincent from Death's Crypt by Fran Marie. Let's see. Would you like me to read this one, or would you be happy enough to read it?
Sure. You can read it.
Okay. Wow, look at that picture. Creepy. So, Vampire Vincent from Death's Crypt. I wonder what this is about. In a pit dark and black he lies. He suddenly begins to rise, an evil gleam within his eyes. A new disguise. Who was this guy? A bony hand pushed from the mud, covered in gore and dark red blood. How blessed, he thought, freed from death, to breathe new life, to take a breath. A new image he now possessed, as he stood above his tombstone rest. But who had granted this liberty, this gift of immortality? In a distinctive tone of voice he said, I refuse to die. I will not be dead. Then he heard a distant cry as the birds fell from the sky. Good evening, a man cloaked in black. I am the one who brought you back. You owe me price. You now must pay a vampire part in my new play. The master of suspense pulled out a script called Vampire Vincent from Death's Crypt. Vinnie roared with laughter at such a role. This part is perfect, for it has no soul. True, so true, but you still have a heart, and in my charge, and in charge of props that play a part. This is the new haunted house on the hill. You're not just playing a vampire. This is real. Or is it? End poem.
Well, great read, and fabulous write. I liked it. You know, it really puts the Vincent character Price into the roles of his film cinematic features, you know. Good evening. And then the birds, you know. Those were epic
Hitchcock things
from... Yeah. Yeah, it was great. You know, I thought it was wonderful. It had a great flow to it. I like the opening stanza, in a dark pit. In a pit dark and black he lies, he suddenly begins to rise, an evil gleam within his eyes, a new disguise. Who was this guy? And then a bony hand pushed from the mud, covered in gore and dark red blood. A blessed, he thought, freed from death, to breathe new life, to take a breath. Yeah, at what cost, I wonder. But no, it was a wonderful write, and well done. Thank you, friend Marie. And Weaver, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I do like a vampire story. This was particularly well done, I thought. The rhyme and the meter was lovely. It was so smooth and easy to read. And that does make a difference. It really does. And yeah, I thought. I love the name Vampire Vincent. Ah, dear. And do we know whether he's actually become a vampire, or is it just a storyline? I love the fact also that, as you said, the birds were brought into the storyline and pinpointed to us who the man in black, the master of suspense, actually was. So yeah, very cleverly done. That was good. So thank you for sharing that with us. It's wonderful.
Thank you, Weaver. I'm looking in the studio here. Okay, we have Miriam back.
Good, thanks.
Hello, welcome back, Miriam.
I'm here.
Hi.
Can you hear?
Awesome.
Yes,
did you get a chance to hear the last poem that was read?
I didn't really get through it well enough to comment, I don't think. Except,
okay.
I can just say with this one thing, that it had one twist when you thought that this vampire was in a play, and then at the very end, it says this was real, so got twisted all the way around.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Miriam. Okay, Weaver, what do we have next?
Well, we have Trick or Treats, What I Learned from Halloween by our dear Miriam. I thought I'd put that up now in case, you know, she has problems again. So, Miriam, would you like to read this for us, please?
I would indeed. Just give me 1 minute to find it.
Yeah, no problem. No hurry.
There it is. Wrote that this afternoon.
I don't see it on the board. Can you repost it, please?
I'm sorry. Weaver? Did you see? I'm sorry. I didn't hear you saying you couldn't see it. I thought you said something about the board. Hang on. My system's gone funny. Okay, 1 second.
Sure.
I just get myself back. Well, I know what's wrong. I admit when I'm wrong. I put it in the wrong place. Oh my god. Oh no, it stopped. CPR, quickly. Right. I've got it.
You rang.
I love the sound effects. Okay, Miriam,
yeah.
I've got it back. I'm sorry, I put it in the wrong place. Somebody's going
to
go, what? Somebody's going to go, what the heck's that?
Tricks or Treats, What I Learned from Halloween. Escaping from our captivating house, We costumed children tramped from door to door. I was a monster. Little Deborah glowed, enchanting in her sequin-studded dress. Fairy? Princess? Alien? Who knew? But charming Deborah skipped and nearly flew. Matthew, a scarecrow, limped and strutted, arms erratically swinging to and fro. Rosma was too old for trick-or-treating, too young to babysit. She played along, good-natured as she was, a Turk, I think. Martin, Nick, and Noli came too, adorned in storybook costumes, every one. Anne was the oldest, dressed in milkmaid garb, complete with pail to hold delicious treats, herding the rest of us as best she could. Our treat bags sagged with goodies as we trudged from house to house. We chorused, "Trick or treat?" We bridled at the stories we had heard of naughty children papering the trees or soaping Chevy windows. Not for us, revenge or rank injustice. We were gentle teens and children, maids and dragons all. At last, we neared a house without a pumpkin. We confidently knocked there anyway. The man who answered was regretful, wary. "I've nothing for you. I forgot," he said. We walked away, reflecting we had plenty. Then Anne spoke up, voicing what none had thought of. "If Hugh, the oldest child, had come along, he would have given all he had to that old man. Imagine all the tricks the other kids might play on that poor guy." I'd like to tell you all of us turned back to do what Hugh'd have done if he'd been there. But we were shy and clueless. We went on to garner more of what we didn't need. We rambled home to gobble candy corn and chocolates until our parents said, "No more tonight. It's late now. Go to bed." That was a magic night, as I recall, with jack-o'-lanterns glowing in the dark and specters reaching out in mocking menace. Yet through the years, what I remember most is Anne's brief musing, which we barely heard. "So now, when I have plenty and you don't, I'll give you all my marshmallows and apples, my chocolate cherries, even plastic spiders. And if you wear a costume, even more." End poem.
I liked the reminiscence to Halloweens of yesteryear and all that entails. You know, it took me to trick-or-treating with my brothers and sisters as well when I was a kid. So you did a beautiful job of that, capturing that innocence of partaking in such a harrowing night and all that entails. So beautiful read and a fabulous write, Miriam.
Thank you.
And what are your thoughts, Weaver?
Yes, that was wonderful, Miriam. Lovely read, too. Yeah, I thought it was a sweet story. And it was, you know, within, as you know, that time of the year, children do play many tricks. And children can be so cruel. So, you know, that part of it I really sort of related to. And then you have that poor old guy who'd forgotten all about it. And I loved the sentiment. I really loved the sentiment of, you know, we should go back and give him something so that he can ward off the horrible tricks that we've played on him for the rest of the evening. And I thought that was lovely, and also very true to form, or true to the way people react. Because you've never done anything like that before, you would feel awkward. You wouldn't know what to say. You know, you wouldn't say, "You know, poor old man, have some candy." So what would you say? So yeah, I thought that was very observant. I really enjoyed that so much. And then you have the last few lines. We went on to garner more of what we didn't need. Exactly. We rambled home to gobble candy corn and chocolates until our parents said no more. What's candy corn? Could you tell me, Miriam, what is candy corn?
Oh, they're horrible. Little waxy candies that are supposed to look like corn kernels. And they're orange at the tip, and then there's a white line, and then they're yellow at the bottom. Or it could be the other way, other way around. They taste terrible.
So good.
Honestly, I don't understand why people eat them. And, of course, we loved them when we were kids.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a different set of ideals when we're children when it comes to food. Automatically, it's an instinctive thing. It's something we have within us when we're very, very young. We react to anything that's bitter as if it might harm us. That's just an instinctive thing. That's why children hate vegetables to begin with. And then as they grow older, their taste buds and everything else change, and so they can tolerate them. So, yeah, perfect. Thank you very much for sharing that with us. It was lovely.
Welcome. It just occurred to me that maybe the people who eat candy corn just do it because they see other people doing it and think it's a thing to do.
It wouldn't surprise me. People are like sheep. Oh, sorry. That's not nice. That was not nice. Sorry, people.
I tried to put some HTML code so that I would have spaces that would actually stick, and I must have done something wrong. So those are actually supposed to be spaces, not ampersand 160 semicolon. line. This is almost all of it is a true story. This is pretty much how we handled Halloween when I was little.
Oh, that's lovely.
There were 10 of us at that time who lived together. My youngest brother, Jonathan, wouldn't have been old enough to go. And my half-brother, we didn't find out about until my parents were dead many, many years later.
Wow.
So, of course, he's not there. But the story of the man who opened the door is true and had no candy is true. And what Anne said, and I'm sure he would have gone back if he had been there, because that's just the kind of person he was.
Mm-hmm. Makes it even nicer.
Yeah. And the other thing I was thinking after I wrote this, I thought, I bet that wasn't an old man. I bet he was about 35, and we were little kids, so we just was an old man.
Of course, yes. Yeah. Oh, dear. Yeah. Anybody over 12, old.
Well, I thought my 8-year-old brother was an adult when I was 3, you know.
Yeah. I can see that. Oh, man. So cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that, Miriam. Beautiful memories.
Oh, I really enjoyed reading.
Lovely. I am in the right place this time. Yes. Okay, people.
Yeah.
Next we have A Forgotten Homestead by Daniel Duhame. I love his name. Daniel Duhame. Do I even think I'm saying it correctly? Okay, would you read this for us, please, Gray?
Yes, sure. A Forgotten Homestead by Daniel Duhame. The old dilapidated house was left vacant for years, moaning and hissing when the wind blew through its rafters. Through the front door, a forgotten fireplace stands, where once people gathered inside a parlor for celebrations and grief. Old oak cupboards are laid one together on the floor, covered with a blanket of dust, and cobwebs are everywhere. The only things that live inside are mice and rats. But on some nights, when darkness comes, a specter of a lady in white appears through a window with a stern look of distaste on her ghostly face because people are trespassing on what was once her land. She wails a spine-chilling chorus every night and descends the old spiral staircase inside where she met her untimely end at the hands of lynchmen who hung her from the rafters because she was caught stealing a horse from a neighbor's barn. And instead of bringing it to court, held a court of their own and found her guilty. An oil lantern is seen through the house's window each night that she appears to signify her torment of being left to wander the old house floors until eternity for her crime. Wow. That was fantastic, right? Spooky. What are your thoughts, Weaver?
Spooky. Yes. See, there we have it again, you see. Ghosts. And people say they don't believe in ghosts. And everybody is allowed their own opinion as far as I'm concerned. I am undecided. But I'll come back and let you know if it's true. I'll haunt you. Oh, dear. Yes.
Hey, you can haunt me anytime.
Thank you. As long as I don't sing. You do not want to hear me singing because that can be quite off-putting. But yes, I thought this was so another beautiful, beautifully written poem about spookiness. But yeah, darkness comes in a white figure. Always in white. Through a window with a stern look of distaste on her ghostly face. Yeah, I can understand. Yeah, this is my place. Get out of here. A lot of these people really don't even know they're dead, I think. They're just wandering about going, why does nobody speak to me anymore? Very well. I like the last stanza. I thought that was also very, it tied everything together. That's why they think there's a ghost there, because you see the lights through the various windows as she wanders around. Oh, dear. She should have, yes, anyway, that was well done. Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Great comment, Weaver. Thank you. And Miriam, what are your thoughts?
Kate, I hate to tell you this, but you're very unlikely ever to see a ghost. I have been told that the people who see ghosts are either the people who are dead certain that ghosts appear, that they are real, and the people who are absolutely certain there's no such thing as ghosts. So if you're just a skeptic, you're not going to see them. Very sad. The story in this reminded me that my father used to say that he had seen a ghost, and it was a woman in white, and it was in the house of his parents' friend Margaret Whittemore. And years after he saw her, he talked to Margaret about the apparition, and she said that she had seen the same ghost, and they talked to each other, described her, and it fit precisely.
Whoa.
Yeah, but the story is different because my dad never heard anything about any crime. Oh, they did. They figured out that they were the previous owners who had died. But, there was no crime committed. So this story actually is quite different and very tragic.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Great comment, Miriam. And I really enjoyed the storyline. You know, it really carries you through the right quite clearly and beautifully, hauntedly, and descends the old her land. I'm sorry. But on some nights when darkness comes, a specter of a lady in white appears through a window with a stern look of distaste on her ghostly face because people are trespassing on what was once her land. She wails a spine-chilling chorus every night and descends the old staircase inside where she met her untimely end at the hands of lynchmen who hung her from the rafters. Wow, that's haunting for sure. Epic, right? Thank you so much for sharing, Daniel. Duhame? All right, where will we go next, Lily?
And next we have A Call to Arms by Ben Hart. Let me just see. Give me a moment. Yeah, I think I'll read this one because it's quite long. And then, okay, I'll read this one. A Call to Arms by Ben Hart. Soldiers, is your duty to the man who commands you or to the mothers whose tears spelled your name on their cheeks? Is your duty to die for a road further into the divide rather than the bridge man should have built? Are your lives worth less than the morose machine tomorrow you lay them down for? Are your lives worth more than the man defending his front door against phantoms of a foreign freedom? Are you still welcome in the garden of thought God had watched bloom since birth, if you dread seeing the enemy again in heaven? Or are you glad to be service, a prisoner, to the battlefields that know not of victory or defeat, nor the names buried in its craters? Soldiers, will you sleep as they lie through their teeth, singing lullabies of liberty? Or will you fight once more, not to die over differences, but to guide humanity out of the shadow of evil, out of the unliving eye, and back to the dream that we're created equal? End poem.
Beautiful read. And, I mean, that's a heartfelt poem. You know, you can feel the energy in this, right? Of these soldiers dying for naught, you know, and, you know, are you a soldier of war or are you a soldier of love is the question. Out of the shadow of evil, out of the unliving eye, and back to the dream that we're created equal. Yeah, that was an epic, right? You know, it really looks at war through clear glasses that you can actually see what's going on and why it's going on. So I thought it was a fantastic write and excellent read, Weaver. And Miriam, what are your thoughts?
I always find tension when I'm in tension inside me when I write about soldiers and wartime and all that kind of thing, because you want to respect and admire the actions of someone who, of people who gave their lives for their country and believed they were doing the right thing. And on the other hand, I at least get overwhelmed by the horrors of war and the conviction that there's almost never a good reason for people to be killing each other. So I think that is the struggle that is going on in the mind of Ben Hart. And he can tell me if I am wrong, but I see both values expressed here. And, you know, I think we're created equal. I mean, I believe that more than I believe almost anything. So, you know, I agree with his sentiments at the end.
Yeah, wonderful comment, Miriam. And good questions posed. Weaver, what are your thoughts?
Yes, to be serious, I totally agree with Miriam. There is never, ever a good reason to take another person's life. I still burn with an anger when I think about the, you know, World War II, World War I, World War II. I still have that feeling that, you know, somebody needs to do something so that something like that will never happen again. It's just barbaric and awful. And it does, it actually hurts my heart, because that should never have happened. A whole tribe of people, a whole plethora of people killed because of one man's deluded, stupid need for power. Sorry, I'll not go on to that anymore. I'll just talk about the poetry, which I think is wonderful. And he's quite right. It should never be forgotten. It should always be in the back of our heads. So well done, Ben, for that sentiment. I thought it was brilliant.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment, Weaver. Thank you. All right. Where are we to next, Weaver?
Well, I was talking too blooming much. I'll be with you in a moment.
I have to say this. I don't mind if you...
That one. Oh, I know. I've gone too far up. That's what it is. Sorry, people. I'll be with you in a second. Everything's gone black, so I've got to wait for it to come back. Here we are. Here we are. Oh, my goodness me. My heart just jumped. Okay. I love all that. I love to be scared. I love the, you know, these jump shots they have in these horror films. I don't like gore and blood, but I love when they have these, what they call jump shots, when just out of the corner of your eye, you see a figure coming towards you, and people just, in this, you know, jump. I love them. They're just so scary.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm back. Then we have it. And what we have is the Stonemason by Liquid Mind Forever. We've not had that before, have we? Let's have a quick look. No, I don't think we have. No, we haven't. And Miriam, would you care to read this for us?
Sure. The Stonemason by Liquid Mind Forever. 1. Ah, sweet darkness surrounds me. Night swallows me. The Stonemason comes. I hear him chipping away at the ancient ruins where I lie, silent, cold, in blackness. 2. To what purpose do you taunt me, Stonemason? To expose me to some woe-begotten time? To tempt me with some unrecognizable beauty? I cannot dismember. Stop! 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 You torture me, chipping mercilessly. You cutting and cutting into the soft underbelly of my darkness. 3. Above ground, disguised, you come like a bloodsucker, sniffing, cutting, chipping away the layers of cankered death, lusting for some scent, some ancient memory, some distant hope, or shroud of Turin. 4. Through the stench of dried feces, years fester with urination steaming. You come here digging in my darkness for hard-shelled answers, answers to unaskable questions that only the dank, dark, rancid stillness knows. 5. Slithering shadows of light drip, shivering reminders of ancient hatred, ugliness so unforgettably buried eons ago, somewhere before time and worlds began. O darkness, deliver me from this evil. 6. Black clouds exhale, extrusions exposing shadows of an earlier day, betray my shelter. Hear the growl of hungry bellies. 7. Light workers scouring the earth search for anything to give meaning and purpose to their tortured minds trying to forget, their rotting hardness, their scarred underbellies. I feel terror dripping from above ground, forcing me face down into the sepulchres of night. 8. Oh, how I love to suckle at the sweet breast of silence. Damn you, blood-sucking scavengers of my night, I can smell you coming. Well, then, come closer if you dare. Look deeper, deeper into the mouth of darkness, here where only I cannot die, but irreverently lie, invitingly, lighting the pathway in, all the way in, into damnation's abyss of madness. End poem. Oh, you were supposed to read this, Gray Eyes.
Yeah, but that's okay. You did a beautiful job with it.
Thank you. I wasn't sure. There's some parts in there that I have no idea what they're supposed to sound like. So I hope I did it justice.
You did it very well. I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. I hadn't noticed that. It's so far down the page. I mean, there's a great big load of whiteness, and then suddenly at the very bottom. So I'm sorry. I didn't see it in time.
Perfectly understand.
You did a beautiful job reading it, Miriam.
Thank you.
But, I like it. You know, it really is harrowing in its darkness and its invitation into the darkness. You know, come in, come in. I like the way, come into the mouth of darkness where only I cannot die, but irreverently lie, invitingly lighting the pathway to, in, all the way in, to damnation's abyss of madness. Ooh, that's haunting. Fantastic, right? And a beautiful read, Miriam. What are your thoughts, Weaver?
Yes, it was very well written, wasn't it? And yes, you read it beautifully. Miriam, I thought it was well done. Some of the stanzas are really, I mean, my particular favorite of them all at the moment is above ground, disguised, you come like a bloodsucker, sniffing, cutting, chipping away the layers of cankered death, lusting for some scent, some ancient memory, some distant hope, or shroud of Turin. Yeah, thank you for sharing that with us, Liquid Mind Forever.
And what are your thoughts, Miriam?
Well, I really like the notes. I always read the notes. Sometimes I like the notes better than the poem. It's interesting background story sometimes. I am not good at understanding experimental poetry. I have one friend who does it very well, and I've learned a lot from her poems. But, I mean, I can tell this is well done. I don't mean that I don't appreciate it, but I do find it difficult. I found it difficult to read aloud, and I find it difficult to read at all just because I'm not sure what I'm doing.
Well, you did a wonderful job of it, Miriam.
Thank you very much. There was really a sense of horror in this, and there were lighter moments as well that I noticed. I liked the repetitions very much, kind of harking back to a previous dance that she'll do with, especially the chipping away, I mean, over and over that comes into it, and it gives some shape to the poem.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment. Thank you, Miriam. All right, Weaver, where are we to next? Please and thank you.
Next we have The Skeleton House by Laura Sanders. So I suppose I should read this. The Skeleton House, Laura Sanders. There it stood, the skeleton house, just wooden beams, no flesh, no padding yet, just mere bones, the workers like ants, eager, fresh. No roof, no windows, no doors, just a bare shell, meats picked out, no walls, no chimney, no floors, slowly metamorphosing, no doubt, like a dinosaur at the Museum of History, constructed piece by piece, put together by screw and bolt, into a building that would please. But at night, they came to haunt the house, filling every pore and crack, quiet and as silent as a mouse. Vapors swirl around, new bricks are added, and polystyrene, a new type of filling. They are locked in as the house is clad. They wait to haunt, wait to scare. It is their thrilling. End poem.
Well, beautiful read, Weaver. And I like it. You know, the house is haunted before it's ever built, which is, you know, there it stood, the skeleton house, just wooden beams, no flesh, no padding yet, just mere bones. The workers like ants, eager, fresh. No roof, no windows, no doors, just a bare shell. Meat picked out, no walls, no chimney, no floors, slowly metamorphosizing, no doubt. You know, I like it. The house, the thought of a house being haunted before it's ever built is a new one for me, so I thought it was a great write with fantastic intent. And what are your thoughts, Miriam?
I've loved dinosaur skeletons for as long as I can remember. They're just fascinating, especially the really big ones. So I really appreciated the reference to the dinosaur being constructed, and that's a metaphor for this skeleton house. And because of the size of the largest dinosaurs, this actually makes sense to have that be the metaphor rather than the skeleton of a human being. And what I really loved about this was all this modern stuff is added to the house to complete it, and it seems that the haunting is trapped inside the house. But in spite of all the cladding of the house, the new bricks and polystyrene, they get to go out and play with their scaring people. It is their thrilling.
Absolutely. Great comment, Miriam. And Weaver, you read it. What did you think?
I enjoyed it. I really did. As you say, the idea of a haunting of what's not even built yet. It was a haunting with intent. Yeah. Although it could be, of course, that the actual ground itself is where the spirits reside, and whatever happens to be built on it is then going to be haunted. I should imagine that would probably be it. I mean, you wouldn't find a ghost hanging about saying, right, well, if somebody turns up, I'll haunt it. that would just be hanging about. That would be no good. Dear. Yeah, I liked it. The whole idea was brilliant. I'd like, this stanza. Well, at night they come to haunt the house, filling every pore and crack, quiet and as silent as a mouse. Vapors swirl around in the night times black. ... I always like a ... Very good. So, yes, thank you so much for sharing this. It was very enjoyable and perfect for a spooky show.
Absolutely. Great comment, Weaver. Thank you. All right, where would you next, please?
And next we have After a Storm by Ray Koop. And Gray, could you read this for us, please?
Sure, you bet. After a Storm by Ray Koop. A flash of lightning, boom of thunder, wrenched me from my peaceful slumber. Bleary-eyed with muddled brain, I hear the raindrops on the pane. As the shadow dance upon the wall, the clock strikes two in downstairs hall. I lie amidst the din with blankets pulled up to my chin. Outside the tempest booms and roars, and I give thanks to be indoors. Morpheus must have called my name and nodded off to sleep again. Awaking as the clock struck three, when all was still as still could be. No shrieking wind, no driving rain, the moon was shining bright again. Then all at once my heart did bound, as from downstairs I heard a sound. A door creaked open, then a moan. I cursed my luck for being alone. I felt so overcome with dread, 'tis then I heard the steady tread. My pleasant dreams turned to nightmares. I heard footsteps ascend my stairs. Who's there? I cried, not understanding who processed upon my landing. Sweating now from every pore, the footsteps reached my bedroom door. A pause and then the faintest scratch. An unknown hand toyed with the latch. Just then the door, it opened wide. A spectral figure stepped inside. Rendered mute with shock and awe, I scarce believed at what I saw. A bearded man, and tall as he, scratched his chin and glared at me. His greasy hair hung long and lank, his odor vile, putrid and rank. Two bloodshot eyes rolled in his head. Be gone, you devil! Go, I said. His long brown coat was torn and old, and fastened by four buttons of gold. No shoes or boots had shod his feet, his like no man would wish to meet. He scratched himself, then scratched some more. Looked at the ceiling, then the floor, caring not a jaw for big nor big, commenced to whirl, gyrate and jig. His tongue it lolled, his eyes were wide. I wished I had some place to hide, but I lay still, though enchanted. The wraith gambolled and raved and ranted, till finally the clock struck five. I thanked the Lord for being alive. My heart was beating loud and clear, despite the shock, ditto the fear. Then from outside a blackbird called. The spectre stopped. He ceased and stalled. The dawn was breaking through the gloom. The first sunbeams streaked in my room. The phantom shrieked and looked aghast. With muttered oaths, he stumbled past, straight through my wall and from my view. And as he left, he murmured, "Boo!" I leapt from bed with renewed vigor, determined to pursue the figure. Hurtling wide in the bedroom door, I charged out into the corridor. He turned to face me, laughed and jeered. Then he slowly disappeared. Ill at ease at what had passed, I trudged downstairs to break my fast. I'd think it through to make some sense. I'd ponder on last night's events. While eating toasts and drinking tea, a gleam attracted me. The source lay by the kitchen door, a golden button on the floor. I rushed across and scooped it up, sat down again, and drained my cup. Did he leave me this souvenir to say goodbye or reappear? Was this but a ghostly note? Would he return to mend his coat? 2 decades later, here I dwell. All is peaceful, all is well. No sign of phantom, rat or mouse disturbs my tranquil little house. I keep the button by my bed, a small glass jar of blue and red. And long before the storm clouds grow, I swear that button begins to glow. End poem. Wow. And then this author's notes, it says, the central character was inspired by a memory I had of the majestic Mr. Ian Anderson of the sublime band Jethro Tull, circa 1969-1970, and the cover of Aqualung. By then, check out them performing around this time with him in his army greatcoat. You'll see what I mean. Huh? Well, it was neat that he was inspired by Jethro Tull to write this, which is excellent. I mean, it was a fabulous write. You know, it has all the eeriness that's, you know, every spooky story needs, and I thought it was just a fabulous presentation of a spooky story. What are your thoughts, Weaver? Uh-oh. Weaver. Check the studio here.
Oh, I'm here. I'm here.
Oh, there you are.
Sorry. Oh, I was away in La La Land there. Terribly sorry. I was reading the poem itself. I forgot to unmute. Yes. Beautifully done. I just love that one. I think it's true to make some sense. I'll ponder on last night's events. While eating toast and drinking tea, a gleam attracted me. Again, it's beautifully thought out, isn't it? We have all of these things happening. And then he gets his, well, proof, I suppose, by finding that button. Yeah, very good. Yes, I enjoyed it. Thank you so much. And you didn't put me to sleep. Of course you didn't. That was just me. That was just me having a moment. Thank you, Ray, for sharing.
Thank you. We have a great comment. And Miriam, what are your thoughts?
I really like the device of having somebody wake up after an awful traumatic encounter with a ghost. And, you know, all relieved and glad. It's the last time I wake up and it must have all been a dream. And then you look over and find a token that the specter left, in this case the brass button. So he took that device and he did it really well, made it his own. But you know what really bothers me about this poem is the ghost scratching himself. And, you know, I hope that in the afterlife, in whatever form it takes, I will not itch.
It's so inelegant, isn't it, really? I mean, come on now.
And some itching that it was so bad that it was actually painful.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't want that to go on. When I'm dead, it'll be over. This is very well. Sorry, I enjoyed it.
Well, of course, it does depend on where you end up, because maybe when you end up in the warmer place, that will be your punishment. You'll have to itch for eternity. Horrible.
Absolutely, yeah. Great comments. And what are your thoughts, Weaver?
I think I just...
I already got you. Thank you. All right, where are we to next?
And next we have The Old McCrae Mansion by Heavenly Angel. And Miriam, would you care to read this for us, please?
Sure. The Old McCrae Mansion by Heavenly Angel. The McCrae Mansion sits on isolated Palm Circle. It has a wraparound porch where family gathered by the bottom steps on an overgrown rosebush grows. Mrs. McCrae used to tend to them lovingly, seemed to be all that mattered. Howard McCrae was notorious for being cruel. He would rather torture his wife than cherish. He was known to slap her until she fell to her knees, treating her as his slave until he put her in her grave, not even shedding a tear when she perished. As the story unfolds, as told in the paper, same as Mr. McRae's throat was sliced the next Halloween night, folks say Victoria McRae came back to set everything right. To this day, they say the old mansion seems to brew ominously with the spirit of Mrs. McRae. In every space, nook, and cranny, evil is breathing, warning intruders to stay away. To learn what we fear is to learn who we are. Horror defies our boundaries and illuminates our souls. If Mrs. McRae doesn't steal it.
Wow, great read, Miriam. And I liked it. You know, it tells you how the place was haunted, you know, by the murder of his wife and, you know, his death and by being sliced in the throat, which is, haunting for sure. This is a beautiful rite. You know, it really pulls in the haunting characteristic of the rite quite beautifully. What did you think, Weaver?
Yes, I like the fact that we have an entity to pin all this onto, and I think that's great, Mr. and Mrs. McRae. I mean, let's face it, we know Howard McRae is an absolute horror. You can tell by his name. Nobody called Howard would be other than that crow.
You're terrible.
It's a good old name. It's an old-fashioned name, isn't it, Howard? Howard. Come here, Howard. Yeah, and I love all the different details. I wonder if this is actually true or a story that was told, because there's a great deal of amazingly wonderful detailing. The wraparound porch and the bottom steps where Mrs. McRae used to tend her roses. I like all that kind of thing. I like that kind of padding out of the story, giving you an image to play with as well as the words. So, yes, I thought it was very well done. I actually thought when I started to look at it that this was going to be from a word pool, because the words that are highlighted, but no, it's not. It's just that maybe it's just something. But anyway, beautifully done. I really enjoyed it, Heavenly Angel. Thank you so much for sharing.
Absolutely. And I think it is a word pool. She has some words listed.
Oh, does she?
Yeah, she's got bottom, paper, rather, torture, porch.
Right.
Hold,
I didn't go down far.
Base, breathing, knee, brew, isolate, circle, grow, and slice. And she used a quote by Shirley Jackson, "To learn what we fear is to learn who we are. Horror defies our boundary and illuminates our souls."
Hmm.
Yeah,
so what did you think of the poem, Miriam?
If Mrs. McRae doesn't steal it.
Sorry, what did you think of the poem, Miriam?
Well, I will say in a minute, but I was just making this joke. She's got the quote from Shirley Jackson at the end of her poem, but that ends with, "If Mrs. McRae doesn't steal it." And I was just saying, I didn't think that was part of the quotation. It's just a bit of horror humor at the very end.
Yeah.
Part of the story that I'm guessing is not true is the part where she comes back and slits the horrible guy's throat. I mean, I don't think ghosts can do that. But you never know. And, there's so much horrible domestic violence that goes on. And it's not only men beating women, but all kinds of genders get involved in that. But, you know, you hear something that horrible, I think it's natural to hope that the guy, the beater, the violent one, is going to get punished some way, or at least come to his senses. So there is a sense of justice in this, although I think Mrs. McRae is not going to be terribly happy as a ghost either. And that's not fair.
No, it's not fair.
All right, well, I've posted the last poem of the night. If you wouldn't mind reading that, please, Weaver.
Oh, I just put another one up, sorry. So ignore that one. Is this the angel with hidden horns, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Coming right up. The Angel with Hidden Horns by Lysha. Present, howbeit absent, on the shore I hold the light you lean for. In the depth I carry the darkness you fear. The eyes keep whirling, the state keeps wavering, emotions keep shifting. I am your savior, howbeit. It is from my flames I shall douse thee. I am the angel with camouflaged horns, what resides beneath the surface, poison dressed as scarlet wine. End poem.
Well, that was a beautiful poem to end with. You know, I liked it. It's haunting. You know, it's demonic clothed in angelic, which is not an easy thing to do. What resides beneath the surface, poison dressed as scarlet wine. Fantastic way to end the poem and a great way to end the show. Thank you so much for sharing, Lish. And what are your thoughts, Miriam?
I didn't actually hear all of it, and I've got my filter on. So I hate to end the show with I'm not going to comment, but maybe somebody can say something in my place.
Sure. Weaver, what did you think?
I thought it was, again, a wonderfully written brevity. And I like the fact that, as far as he's concerned, the actual chap, is it a guy? Yeah, it must be. I am the angel with camouflaged horns, what resides beneath the surface, poison dressed as scarlet wine. Beautifully done, well thought out, and I really enjoyed it. So thank you so much for sharing that with us.
All right, well, I'm going to play this one tomorrow.
Oh, that's so scary. Oh, Miriam, are you okay?
I don't know after that. I'm not sure.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm here all week.
Yeah.
Well done. I love that.
Well, that was an awesome night of poetry. Thank you, ladies, for joining me. Much appreciated. You have a wonderful night, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, my dear. Good night. Good night, Miriam. Great to have you with us.
Good night, Miriam.
Hi.
Good night, Weaver.
Good night, my dear.
Much love, people.
Yeah. Bye-bye.